Have a great day.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Hupie and Abraham. In a moment, it's all gone. Your job, your car, your entire future. When you are seriously injured in an accident, visit a law firm with experience. Hupie and Abraham, 800-800-5678.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, if you're interested in making a positive difference in a child's life, local mentoring programs are in need of volunteers. There are a wide variety of opportunities available. Visit uwp.edu keyword mentorkr.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus Funeral Home. The staff at Piasecki Althaus can answer your questions about pre-planning a meaningful funeral or tribute service. Piasecki Althaus, honoring and serving families in our community since 1931.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radial Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning, and welcome to Community Matters. I'm your host, Laura Sumner Kuhn, and I'm delighted today to have some guests with us that will enlighten us. Jonathan Delagrave, who is the Racine County Executive, and Hope Otto, who is the Racine County Human Services Director, and Ed Kamen, who is the Superintendent of the Juvenile Detention Center of Racine County. Welcome this morning. Thank you for joining us. I hope we will have a rich discussion about juvenile justice in Racine County as well as our state. And what prompts this is kind of the situation of events that have led up to the county thinking about restructuring the way that it handles youth in our community, particularly those who have met the juvenile justice system. Just to set this up for our listeners and remind you, a couple years ago, I think juvenile justice became the focal point in Wisconsin when there were some pretty atrocious things that were happening at Lincoln Hill School for Boys and the Copper Lake School for Girls, both near Irma, Wisconsin. Since then, the state legislature has voted to close those facilities with somewhat of a likely idea of 2021, I believe, at this time. And they passed Wisconsin Act 185, which would come up with ways to close those facilities and replace them. Recently, Governor Tony Evers presented his budget to the state, and he's calling for a total of $274 million to revamp the state's juvenile system, which would include about $60 million for counties to restructure their facilities. Of course, that budget is proposed at this point, and there's probably much more debate and discussion at the legislature before it's passed. But they have announced two proposed sites for Type 1 juvenile facilities, which would be for the most the largest offensive adjudicated juveniles in the state, one in the north side of Milwaukee County and another one in Outagamie County, which is probably somewhat proximal to Appleton, I believe. But then there's room for a number of other county facilities that they're looking at. So in the meantime, Racine, that has long studied juvenile justice, handled care for our juveniles, and have talked about ways in which to come up with alternatives to incarceration and how to care for youth in trouble, in the meantime, has come up with a plan that you've recently proposed. So I kind of turn it over to the three of you, who are all involved in this constant study of how we handle youth in our community, especially those who have been troubled and probably who are in many cases victims of trauma. And those who have crossed the law somehow, and they all become part of our reason for caring. And I'll turn it over to you. Maybe you could start with a little bit about the proposal and then back into, you know, what is the situation in Racine County right now?
Well, Laura, thanks again for the opportunity to have the Racine County team on. Really appreciate it. You know, juvenile justice is a passion here in Racine County. You know, we first, you know, strive for unification of our families, not reunification, but unification. Not so essentially not even trying to have the children removed from the house if, you know, situations happen. We want to try to obviously keep children with their parents. That's our number one goal. But in the event that it doesn't happen, and there are obviously situations that make that occur, you know, we want to make the best possible placement for our juvenile, not only in terms of program initiatives and trying to get the child back with his family or her family as soon as possible, but really we don't want the second major goal is we don't want our children to enter the adult court system. So that's kind of our two major goals here. So that's kind of what we strive for. And, you know, with this opportunity of 185, you know, we want to take advantage of it and really create a system for our children, whether it's placement in foster care or up through juvenile detention, to have that placement the best possible situation so they can enter or re-enter society or back with their family as soon as possible and not enter the adult court system.
I might want to add, too, there's something that's happening simultaneously to all this discussion about in the state about how do we handle our youth. But there's also a move to change the law that would allow 17-year-old offenders to go into adult facilities. Is that part of the discussion in your handling children in Racine County as well?
It is part of our discussion in the designing and how we would look at building a facility, and mostly in size. You know, we believe philosophically that, 17-year-olds should be within our system, but the concern is more about the ability to pay for that. In the governor's proposal, it does appear that there would be some sufficient reimbursement for youth that are served in our facility. And so, you know, as long as we have the resources to be able to do that, that would be in our design.
Could you give us an idea of the number of youth that we're talking about and kind of the characteristics of how they end up to be under the county's care in the first place? What are you seeing happening?
We see a number of things. You hit it right on the nose earlier when it mentioned trauma. 99% of the kids that we deal with by the time we get them in detention have been victims of some sort of trauma. So we've taken a very trauma-informed care approach. Now, that doesn't mean it excuses behavior, but it really helps to explain that what happened to that individual rather than focusing on why or what did you do. So currently in our juvenile detention center, we're at all-time lows right now. We've got, I think, 27 kids in there today, and those aren't just Racine kids. About half of those kids are also from Kenosha County because we serve in a regional center already. They are there for as short as 24 hours, and we have some kids that are in our ACE program, which is the Alternatives to Correction Through Education, which is in lieu of sending someone to Lincoln Hills, Copper Lake, and they can be with us for up to 365 days.
So how does that work, Ed?
So if a kid comes in and has a correctional order, depending on what occurred, what the crime was, what the deal that has been cut between the defense attorney, the district attorney, or the assistant district attorney, and, of course, a judge has to sign off on it. So our ACE program, for instance, we've got some pretty good results. We're about 37% of the kids actually recidivate within a year. Where when you look at state correction, that number's actually into the 90s. It's a focus on school and education, but it's also a focus on behavioral modification. So the kids are in school during the day, and up till the time they go to bed at 9 o'clock at night, they're involved in programming. And that programming is everything from anger management, AODA, no surprise, probably about 90% of our kids have legitimate AODA issues.
Which is alcohol and drug abuse.
Alcohol and drug abuse.
Maybe don't know.
Right? Usually marijuana is their drug of choice. A lot of times it's self-medication. They're self-medicating for what currently the trauma that's been there. And again, this isn't about excusing behavior, but it's really about explaining behavior. So the ACE program, they can be there for up to a year. And what I like to say, because we actually, we've got some incentives for Student of the Week. We actually have pizza in my office where I get to know a number of things. Number one, it lets me know what's going on in the facility, lets me know what the kids are thinking, lets me know how the kids have been treated. And one of the big things I think is I get to find out who that kid really is. And then they get back home, and they're in the same environment, and all of the same issues that happen. And that's why it's so important that the services, I think, from a human service perspective that we add, that we're able to put those in-home services in place to help that kid from reoffending.
So you've brought up a couple points I just want to kind of clarify, because not everybody would be aware of what happens. So when somebody is steered through the ACES program, the schooling that they get, do they also attend their home school, or do they just attend the county-run school? How does that work, or do you do a little bit of both?
Excellent question. So we actually have three teachers and a teacher's assistant from Racine Unified at the detention center. So those up until first and second phase, well, ACE is actually a three-phase program. Each phase you can get through in about 8 weeks. You don't always pass each week based on behavior, based on a lot of other issues. So for the first two phases, they attend school and detention. For the third phase, that kid actually attends the Racine Alternative Education Center, the Ray Building, at the Transitional Education Program. So they're actually off-site in third phase all day long. There's a couple reasons for that. Number one, it starts preparing them for going home, being in their home schools. It also allows us to observe behavior. So while they're on that third phase, if we see behaviors that are currently going on, because there's a bit more freedom, it's issues then that we can go back and address and also find out, well, maybe you're not ready to go home yet. Maybe you haven't learned everything that you need to. Or, yep, looks like you've really got it.
One thing I would add to that, Laura, is that Ed mentioned that about half of our population is from Kenosha. When a Kenosha juvenile comes to our facility, they are considered a Racine Unified student. So it's not as if they're not getting that schooling. They are incorporated as a student, and they get the same services that a Racine juvenile does.
Thanks.
And with that, one other important thing I'd like to add, our kids going through ACE, they're going to get about 1.25 credits. However, we do a big focus on credit recovery. And we're averaging right now of our kids coming out at ACE at about 4.75 credit.
And if when they were in state corrections, in 2 years, they would get about a half a credit. So, you know, we really feel like just from a high level that we know how to run initiatives in our juvenile detention facility. Our recidivism, as Ed says, drops, high school credits. Another component that we really focus on is mental health, children's mental health. So all services that we believe that we're really good at doing, and it shows from our results.
And the mental health issue is a big one. Ed, you've already talked about the number of children that you see that have alcohol or drug abuse issues. Can you give me an idea of how many students that you're seeing or children that you're seeing who might face mental health issues in addition to AODA issues?
Every child in our detention center is offered mental health services, and 99% of those kids take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a mental health therapist on site 48 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
and her time is taken up all day long, whether it's groups, anger management groups, or just individual counseling or individual therapy going on.
One other piece to that is, so Ed had mentioned about a 90% threshold on those who need mental health. It's the same with medication as well. When I, in a former life, I used to be the head of the juvenile detention center, and it was about 50% of those kids entering our facility were on medication of some sort. Now it's about 90 or over 90%.
I think part of that is also when we talked about earlier, the county executive was talking about diversion services and being able to serve our youth when at all possible in the community, and making sure that the only youth that are going in there are the ones that, because of whatever crime that they committed, and the safest environment for them is the detention center, that's who we're serving there. And so we're seeing more youth that are needing and meeting those criteria, that are needing medication and the services.
And that's a very big challenge, because all around the state there have been there's been a lack of providers for mental health, especially for youth. Mm-hmm. I know the county has tried to address that issue with its behavioral services department, which really isn't that old at this point. It's still a rather new entity of the county. But tough to attract providers for many of the areas around the state. So what do you see now? You've kind of given us the lay of the land. What are the biggest challenges, do you think, that the county faces among all those things that you've just mentioned?
The biggest challenge, I think, to when you're speaking directly to youth justice, is the physical plant. And Act 185 and the changes in the legislation actually it's made this a really desirable option to construct a new facility. The programming that we do and everything that Ed has explained, you can see is, you know, really state of the art, and we're doing amazing programming with really great results. But the physical plant is a limitation for us to be able to take it to the next level. So being able to partner with the state and have the reimbursement to construct a new facility that is more conducive for healing and for treating youth for, you know, their kids. And so we want to make sure that we're creating the most home-like environment, and that'll provide a better incentive for rehabilitating.
Along with... There's a fiscal component to this that's significantly challenged for the county. So 4 years ago, or when I was elected as county executive, my first budget, we put about $2.1 million of county levy money into out-of-home placements for our youth. So it's for those youth who can't be in their home for whatever reason that may be. And one of those placements is in our juvenile detention center, but there's also group homes, foster care, kinship care, which is basically a relative of the child. But now, this last budget, we had to put $4.6 million into that those initiatives or those out-of-home placements. And what's really significant about that is not just the increase in the money, but our actual, as Ed said, you know, in our juvenile detention center currently, we're at our lowest numbers. Our out-of-home placements, because of initiatives in front-end programming, are actually lower than what they were 4 years ago. So why is it costing so much more money? Well, the out-of-home placements have become much, much more expensive. So, for example, state corrections 4 years ago, it was a little bit under $300. Now it's over $500 a day to be able to do that. Our group homes are also more expensive, not only because of, you know, obviously just increases with inflation, but also they're taking on more complex children. So their services have to be more diversified, such as providing mental health, providing insurity that they are taking their medication and getting their medication refilled. So it's, yes, placements are going down, and we're, I think, one of the few counties that actually their placements are going down. I think many other counties, their placements are significantly going up. So that's a kudos to the team here at Racine County. But just the expense of the placement. So we really need to make sure that we can unify or reunify families as best we can, so we don't incur those placements. They're only going to get more expensive as we move forward.
So could you explain to us the way that you've designed this proposed new facility, and what are the attributes of it? What would it include, and why would that be an advantage over what we have now? And I don't know if there's a site that's been selected for it or not, so can you talk a little bit about that?
So I'll let the two experts talk, but what I would say is that we... our current juvenile detention center gets an annual review every year from the state. It basically recertifies us as a that we're in compliance with state statutes. And when that jail inspector, or in this case, juvenile detention inspector, comes through, he always reminds me, you know, at the state, we certify every year good jails and good detention centers, and we also certify bad jails and bad detention centers, and your physical layout is not very good, but we're still going to certify you. So from what Hope said, physical plant is very important, and this opportunity to be able to do something in a proactive way is really critical.
So some of the changes that we're looking at. Number one, our facility was designed mid-90s, and it was designed just like a jail. So it has day rooms with thick glass, with tinted glass. So it's basically kids behind glass in a, what we call as indirect supervision, meaning staff are constantly going around looking. This design is totally different. Number one, the housing units will have a small outdoor area where they can go out as well. Staff will be direct supervision, so staff will be in them. The staffing ratio will, right now it's 1 to 15, will be 1 to 8. And a huge focus on programming and an even larger focus on education and vocational education. So this design, all one floor, I'll say campus, it's still a secure correction environment. It's, you go in, you don't leave. Your door locks at night when you sleep. However, what the science will tell us, and what you kids don't behave like adults when they're in a correction setting. Right. When adults are in a correction setting, they behave for the most part because they know they've got X amount of days to serve. They count those days down. People put money on their commissary, what they call the books, so they can get their treats. Kids don't behave. If the kids behave, they wouldn't be in detention. They behave because staff are able to develop relationships with them. And then once you develop the relationship and develop the trust, you get that kid then to be able to think, you know, maybe the choices I've made haven't been the best in the world. So with a physical plant designed around that, so we can have intramural sports games. A kid can go out and run and scream and holler for 60 minutes a day, which is what kids do. Because remember, we serve kids from the ages of 10 to 17. And I have a 13 and a 14-year-old in detention right now, and we've had them as young as 11. So I think that's the biggest change, I would say. It's more focused on a campus environment. It's focused on with direct supervision and an even larger focus on education and vocational education.
As much as the environment can be natural and home-like, you know, as we've talked a lot about placements and where youth are best set up for success and being able to, you know, reunify with their families eventually after they've served whatever time due to, you know, their sentencing. But the design of this facility is going to be as natural and home-like as possible so that when they do reintegrate into the community, it's less of that drastic change as well.
Yeah, one of our other focuses in our programming, especially in ACE, is the family involvement. So currently, a kid that's in the ACE program, they have a weekly family meeting. So we're looking at continuing that and expanding upon that. Even a family room. So because events happen while the kid's in detention, like birthdays or people close to them pass away, all those same life issues. So also with the understanding that there'll be an area for families to focus on that family, because if we can help that family get the services that they need, that means that child has the supports in place when they get back home and everybody's on the same page. And we ultimately end up with a better citizen and another kid that's entering the workforce.
You bring up some good points. I mean, having the family involved is so important, both in perhaps helping parents navigate changes that they might need to make in their homes to accommodate the best situation for their child when they return, and also just to, you know, celebrate those things or discuss things as they come up in the family. How much is transportation an issue for the families that have children in detention? Do you provide transportation to families to get to the detention center? And I would imagine there are a number of services you discover that the family is in need of as you work deeper with the child. So how much of an extension then do you find yourselves working with family members?
So obviously having a local regional detention center versus Lincoln Hills, that's one of the motivators for us to be able to build this facility, because transportation is an issue, especially when you're looking at, you know, driving 5 hours to northern Wisconsin. However, locally, we don't tend to see a huge issue in terms of transportation because we are on the bus route. Usually there's a friend or somebody that's able to take a family member to our facility. However, if a parent did express an issue, we would certainly help with a bus token or something to be able to assist with that. But I don't think we have routine asks for that.
We don't. What we will do as well is we'll change our visiting hours, because it's really, really important for that child to have contact with those significant other people in their lives. So we've got set visitation hours, but based on parents working, can't get there at that time, we'll be as accommodating as we need.
And, Lori, you mentioned something that we really didn't get a chance to respond to, is about the site or location. We haven't gotten to the point of exactly where we want to place this facility. We've narrowed it down to 4 or 5 spots, but that being said, the location is also important in terms of we take into consideration transportation, bus route, things of that nature, so we can make transportation as less of a barrier as possible.
And should we have this new facility, would you be serving a wider swath of southeastern Wisconsin then, and what would the radius of that be roughly?
We're still working that out in terms of the other counties, where if they're going to apply to build a facility or where they're going to go. But the idea in the terms of the legislation is to create a larger regional presence in these facilities. So, you know, we could have as many as 7 or 8 other counties wanting to use our facility, from, you know, as west as Rock County to up north as Washington County, and, you know, really anywhere in between except for Milwaukee County, they'll have their own. So, the reason or the impetus of this is many reasons, but one of them is to create a larger regional presence in these facilities.
So there seems to be two characteristics or two definitions of juvenile detention facilities, a type one and then a more non... It's still a secure facility, but not as maximum security or whatever as it would be. Can you describe the differences or variations of those two facilities and what you envision us having here then?
So let's start with our current system. So current system, there is one type one. That's Lincoln Hills Copper School. And then there's everything else. So currently Lincoln Hills serves children who have been waived in the adult court. So they're under the age of 17, but they've committed a crime that would be considered by statute to be able to be tried by an adult, and they go to Lincoln Hills. There is another portion or another type called SJO, which stands for Serious Juvenile Offender. That's a number of just crimes by statute that say, yes, you're an SJO. You're still in the juvenile system, but you go to a type 1 facility. Then there's a third type of every other kid that commits a crime that has a correction order. Those kids now are currently also housed at Lincoln Hills Copper Lake, or in the case of Racine or Kenosha, the kids that we put in through our Alternative to Correction Through Education program. So what Act 185 did was state that those that are in the adult system and the serious juvenile offenders will go to a type 1. Everybody else on a correctional order will go to the county's Type 2's Secure Residential Center for Children and Youth, otherwise known as the SRCCCY.
Thank you. It gets a little confusing going through all of those levels. Do we have any Racine County residents who are at Lincoln Hills now or Copper Lake now?
We have one who is coming home in a week or so.
Oh. So then what kind of provisions would you make for somebody who is returning to the area? Will you be working with them after they have completed their time at Lincoln Hills or Copper Lake?
So the Juvenile Detention Center works really closely with our youth and family division, who provides, again, the step-down services that we talked about, whether it's that we can provide those interventional services prior to entering into a correctional facility, or if we're doing that as a step-down, that's part of the integrated service delivery model that we have within youth justice.
And we don't, Laura, we don't believe in having our kids send up to state juvenile correction. So when we did have more of a population up there, we had a team that we set aside proactively to basically work with state correction staff to get that juvenile or those juveniles out of that particular placement or out of Lincoln Hills or Copper Lick as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's interesting about the juvenile justice system is a judge can sentence a juvenile to a year or 2 years up in state corrections, but we as a county, if the juvenile has complied, we can get that juvenile out much, much faster than what the sentence was deemed at the time by the judge.
And there is a Racine County youth justice worker that goes up and visits that youth regularly.
How often might that happen?
They're usually up there once a month.
Okay. So we've kind of talked about a number of things. When it comes to this new vision for kind of restructuring juvenile justice in Racine County, what are the next steps that we should be looking at? I had understood that there had been a deadline for the end of March to be able to submit a plan to the state, but that seemed like that might be changing. So maybe you can take us through the steps now that have to happen.
So the grant committee was formed, and I believe that was last week. There is still a letter of intent that counties must submit by March 31st, and Racine County is prepared to do so. We will be submitting on behalf of Racine County, but as both Ed and the county executive mentioned, we will have a regional approach. Our facility currently has served in that capacity, and so we will have letters of support from the regional directors and county administrators and executives indicating that they will support and utilize our facility. From there, they will issue a formal request for proposal, which we are intending to apply for. We're looking at probably sometime in June or July of having that awarded. And then from there, we would get support from our local county board to then engage in the construction and design of the official facility.
With an eye to an anticipated completion date of,
as you indicated, probably mid-2021.
Okay. I want to backtrack because we've been talking a lot about nuts and bolts of juvenile justice, but we really haven't drilled into perhaps some of the root problems that bring a juvenile to the justice system. And you've touched on it a bit, Ed, about trauma. But I'm wondering if any of the three of you can describe a little bit more about what is childhood trauma and what are we seeing coming or happening among youth in Racine County?
Well, another excellent question. So let's start with the science. So we start with infant brain development. So we found out that, and this actually started from a study in the 70s, the Department of Defense did, based on PTSD in Vietnam vets. And they come to find out that those had positive childhood experiences between the ages of 0 and 3. So had a parent, was held as a child, stayed in the same household, didn't have a sense of loss, did much, much better with the issue with the PTSD than those same children in that same type group who had negative childhood experiences between 0 to 3. And we came to find out that actually the way your brain develops from 0 to 3 based on the amount of bonding that has occurred really affects you for the rest of your life. Then we go into juvenile brain development, and we now know that a juvenile's brain really doesn't fully develop until the age of 24. So, and especially the last thing to develop is impulse control, which anybody that's raised a teenager knows a lot about that. Then there was another study done out in San Diego that talks about ACEs, or adverse childhood experiences, where started actually clinically following a group and looking at the number, the ACE, and ACEs are things such as a parent that's been incarcerated, a death, a loss, being removed from the home, those type of very traumatic experiences. And those individuals that had 4 or more ACEs had very negative health outcomes 10, 20, 30 years down the road. So you put all that together, and it sounds like an excuse, but it's not, because everybody's still responsible for their behavior, people make choices, children make choices, but it helps us understand the choices that they've made, what went up to that choice, and then even more importantly, what behavioral modification therapy can you do with them to help that individual learn not to make those same type of choices. So the crimes that kids commit, it's the same thing that you read in the newspaper or see in the news. There's gun charges, there's theft, there's battery, there's aggravated assault, there's all those. And again, trauma-informed approach doesn't excuse any of that behavior. They're in detention. They've lost privileges. That is the punishment. But the idea is you don't just warehouse a child. And from a selfish perspective, that child is the next workforce. That child has to learn to become a productive member of society. They are our next leaders. So in an environment then, so you've got them in a correction setting or a detention setting, what type of services can we put in place to help that child get to where they need to be?
What kind of partnerships have you had to put in place to make this kind of integrated programming for a child work? Have you had to partner with, say, you had talked about education, including vocational education. So do you partner with Gateway? Do you partner with other community agencies or organizations that help you provide all of the services needed?
So underneath the leadership of Jonathan and my vision for human services was to create a more integrated service delivery model. We have all of those support systems within our facility. We have our workforce development center. We have public assistance programs. We have behavioral health services. We have the youth and family division that does more proactive and preventative programming like our home visitation program. So by nature, just within our facility, we are able to provide all of those support systems for our youth in the detention center or the secure residential center that we will have. But also, yes, our strong community partnerships for the vocational rehab, we're not going to be providing those ourselves. We would be looking to Gateway to help with developing those career pathways to help support our youth to become more productive citizens. As well as something we're very proud of is our Credible Messenger program that we are partnering with a YMCA, and they are essentially connecting with mentors that are people who have been through the juvenile justice system and have come out on the other end and are helping to provide that guidance and support to our youth in the facility to learn from that and to provide that sort of mentorship and support that they need.
That's an excellent segue to another question that I have, and that is that do you have a person that you can tell us a little bit about, obviously remaining anonymous, but that's kind of your success story from leaving juvenile justice system and the detention center in Racine County?
There's a few. One of the things I tell all new staff and remind existing staff is you're never going to know when you make a difference. And when you find out you make a difference, and I've only been there for 3 years, but there's a number of staff that have been there a lot longer, and there are all the times they'll talk about, I was over at Kohl's, and the person that helped me pick out a suit is such and such. They were in detention 5-10 years ago. So there are a lot of those, and again, I can't go into a lot of specifics, but the fact that our recidivism rate is as low as it is, and these kids... Everybody can make a mistake, but if you learn from your mistake, the thing is you just don't know. I had actually one young lady who had gone through our program 3 years ago when I first started, and she actually showed up, and it was a huge surprise to me that she wanted to speak to some of the kids because she actually went through detention, had some issues once she got out, ended up briefly in the adult system, and is now given up, is in recovery from her substance abuse issue, and credits a lot of the stuff that people talked to them while they were in detention. Some of the same kids that you never would have thought you got through that have said some very terrible things and have really acted up are those same kids that 2 or 3 or 4 years down come back to you and just want to say thank you.
Oh, that's got to be fulfilling, huh?
It is, because it doesn't happen near enough. So when it does happen, you really have to take advantage of that moment.
Hang on to those, right? So the what the county does in juvenile detention and all the services that you put into place is just kind of one piece of the puzzle of the juvenile justice system. I mean, we have law enforcement agencies that may arrest children to begin with, and you have the judicial system that actually may sentence or charge children with crimes in the first place. Could you describe kind of the relationship you might have in Racine to the police department, for instance, or the you know, any of the municipal departments that would be arresting children in the first place, and the judges who sit on the circuit court system?
We actually have a group known as the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative. It's an initiative from the Annie Casey Foundation. That on that committee are members of Unified School, the juvenile justice judge, the police department.
Public defender.
Public defender, all of those.
DA. Mm-hmm.
For example, the beginning of every school semester, working with the police department, the school resource officers, and the principals, I do a detention tour of the high school and middle school principals. So they understand just exactly what detention is. The idea being is, before you pick up the phone and call law enforcement, is this something you really need to call law enforcement about? Or is this something that, back when I was in high school and was sent to detention, what was a whole different detention? It was a room where you had to sit there and do schoolwork and were quiet for an hour. Do we need to look at some of those types of things? So there are a number of committees and another involvement of all of those, and we talk regularly all the time.
Have you seen a shift then in our approach to juvenile detention, say, in the last 5 to 10 years, among all of your agencies together, law enforcement, the judges, in usually involved with juvenile detention issues or juvenile arrests?
I think not only locally, but statewide and nationally, we're seeing a shift to more community-based service provision. And just, again, just to reiterate the points of earlier, if we can recreate an environment that's as, you know, least restrictive and as natural as possible, we know the outcomes are that much better. So, yes, we definitely have seen a significant decrease in the number of placements that we have in correctional facilities, and we're able to have better outcomes while providing the services at a reduced cost in the community. And we have great support from our local judicial branch in understanding our philosophy to youth justice.
Wonderful. We've covered a lot of ground this morning. I wondered if there's anything left that you think that you wanted to mention in the way of juvenile justice or the new programming and the new plan that you're looking to put in place.
Well, I'll never turn down a shameless plug, but we really believe that in Racine County, our juvenile justice, our youth and family, we do a really good job. Our recidivism rate is lower than, you know, everybody around us. And we want to take advantage of this new legislation. We're going to take advantage and even provide better care for our juveniles down the road.
And the county executive has just convened a task force looking at site selection and what it's going to look like and all of those things as well.
And it's important to get the reason for the task force is to get community perspective and making sure that although we have a lot of experts in the field, they're helping guide us in the design of this, including the trauma-informed principals and our partners with St. A's, who's a regional expert in this. We also know that the community needs to have a voice in this process, and the task force allows that.
Well, I want to thank you, all three of you, for coming this morning. Jonathan Delagrave, our Racine County Executive, Hope Otto, our Racine County Human Services Director, and Ed Kamen, who's the Superintendent of the Juvenile Detention Center of Racine County. Thank you for laying out plans for how we care for youth in Racine, and we'll be watching.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org, where you can listen live, online, 24 hours a day. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is available via HD radio. For more information, call 262-564-3030.